This is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice, with me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Bell West.
And we swelter here, like the rest of the country, in the heat of the early spring.
Hottest May ever.
Oh, I do not know what... I think we should probably plan for when the waters start rising about our feet. For now, we're just making sure to wear straw hats and smear ourselves with sun cream.
As a friend of mine said, when going to a barbecue last weekend, he has a special SPF 50 Irish Heritage Edition.
Protect your freckles now. This month, apart from sweating, we are going to be looking at an enthusiasm of Roger's. A game system he's been trying out, and a game setting which he is returning to.
So I finished running one campaign, and I'm just in the process of starting to play another.
In that case, we will share our wisdom and learning with you shortly. But first,
Thank you to John Hagen for dropping some money in our tip jar.
We do appreciate it, Squire. We really do.
Yep, and. I'm too hot to come up with something clever to say, but paypal.me/RogerBW will reach us. And if you say it's for this, I'll make sure I share it with Mike.
Yeah, keep the fan going in the background, Roger. Onward. Roger has an enthusiasm, and he wishes to tell us about it.
Well... In another way, you could regard this as a follow-up on the bundle of holding promotional segments that we do every so often when they look interesting.
Because this month, I'm afraid, never mind.
Yeah, but this is a game that was in the bundle of holding in November last year, and we talked about in the December 2025 episode. And I have actually now run it. And I have some thoughts, not all of them negative.
This is unusual. We shall hoist a celebratory flag and blow some trumpets if we can afford the sound effects.
So the thing I should probably say as a proviso is that this is a game that was written in Italian and translated into English. The English is not bad, but I sometimes feel that things are not expressed as clearly as they might be, and certainly I'm not a stranger to... picking up systems that are moderately complex. It took me 3 sessions, I think, to get all the mechanics worked out and us to play it right. So that's the thing to watch out for. I have written a cheat sheet.
But of course, I offer it to the publishers for a second edition.
Well, I'll also stick it on the website somewhere. But anyway, first of so all... It, yeah.
Yeah, go on. Well, characterise the system for people who weren't listening in December.
I think I would characterise this as what Savage Worlds promised and didn't deliver.
Ooh,
it is a fast-moving action-y game.
Yeah.
And it is more interested in being fast-moving and dramatic than it is in being in any way detailed or accurate. It's upfront about this. There's no deception going on here.
Yeah.
And that is one of the things I've been looking for. I've tried Savage Worlds, I've tried Doctor Who, various other things. They all have things I like, but also things that don't really work for me. And this, as it will turn out, is another of that list. But it is still potentially worth looking at. Anyway, first of all, we loved... I ran this, as I say, with Watson Hall. We all loved the character generation. You have a checklist of stuff you have to pick... But the two most important bits are your role, which is essentially the stuff you can do, like commando, yeah. Face, the brain, that kind of thing, and your trope, which is a broad brush characterization, you know, the leader, the good Samaritan, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Each of these will channel your choices of attributes and skill points and feats and things. There are a lot of feats in this. Basically special things you can do because you are a whatever.
Yeah. The moves in Powered by the Apocalypse.
Yes, I guess there is one great big list, and you will have perhaps four or five that you will choose two from just for a starting character. Anyway, you do still have choices, is the point, even though you have your role and your trope. The main thing I would note, though, is that you must copy the full mechanics of your feat onto your character sheet, because they do not all use the same mechanics. Some of them are quite fiddly. You need to have ready to hand the idea that, aha, if I do this, I will be better at it in a particular way.
I think that's I think that would work better when you're creating character sheets on a computer rather than writing it by hand.
Probably, yes. I mean, they do provide a form-fillable sheet. It is usable. It has space for this, though you probably have to write quite small and neatly.
I fail at that first gate.
But I think the key thing is that you do need to have those mechanics ready to hand. Well, okay. Here I go to my second point, which is the core mechanic. There is a single core mechanic. You have dice. Basically, you have four stats, I think, and five or six skills within each of them, and you add those together, and you will get a number probably between 2 and 6 for the particular thing you want to do.
Yeah.
You can get more or fewer dice for harder things or adverse circumstances or whatever, and you will ultimately be rolling between 2 and 9 d6s.
Right.
And this, I think we mentioned in the original bundle of holding promo that they do give a probability table, which I don't necessarily need as a player, though it's nice, but as a GM potentially writing adventures, I absolutely want to know that the guy who's really good at this will have a 37% chance of doing it at this difficulty. That's the sort of thing I need when I'm writing adventures. And it's my frequent argument against dice pools, but see the other episode for that. I won't talk more about that. You look for matches rather than individual numbers.
Oh, goody.
A basic success is 2 of a kind, and they potentially they can go up to 5 of a kind. If you get 6 of a kind, you become the GM for that round.
I beg your pardon. I think I may have found my second stumbling point. Whilst I, of course, am willing to leap into the saddle at any second, I have players, I have friends who will not.
Well, do bear in mind this is only for that one round, so the most munchkin you can be is probably the fight is over and we go on to the next thing.
I'm not worried about the munchkins. I'm worried about the ones who go, what do I do now?
Oh, fair enough. I will say the thing that I usually say when we're talking about Watson Hall is that I'm very fortunate with this group because we all GM, at least sometimes we are all familiar with that.
Watson Hall is not a bunch of shrinking violets and daffodils.
No. I'll have to tell them that later. Anyway, so there are some fiddles you can do with this. If you have at least one pair but not as good a success as you need, you can gamble that one pair to re-roll all your non-matching dice and hope that they will fall into the pairs or sets that you've already established. But if you don't improve it, then that success goes away as well.
Okay, a quick question here. Is both height and width in rain terms, i.e. the number on the dice and the height of the and the value of that number?
No, with one exception.
Okay, go on.
That one exception is that if a roll is marked as dangerous, which is orthogonal to anything else it might be, difficult or easy or whatever, then for each one you have rolled in the final result, you lose one grit, which is effectively a hit point. You have, I think, 12 of them.
So you have painted the Mona Lisa, but you have managed to rupture yourself in the process.
I don't think that's the sort of thing they would regard as a dangerous role. But yes, essentially, the one is not a better or worse success than the six. It's only a matter of what you have that's matching.
Okay.
And given my history with the whole height and width thing, that's just fine with me. So you can see that what falls out of this, you can have spare matches. You know, I needed one pair, I have two pairs.
Mm-hmm.
And those give you more actions. You do more stuff in your
round.
All
right, that's pretty elegant. If one of the troubles with rain was that you had to decide whether you were going to do that, try for that in advance, and that complicated matters, and made people disinclined to gamble. If you get the extra action, if you succeed like that, then that is an improvement. And maybe I should mention this to Greg Stolze.
Yeah, that also, some of the feats need an action to activate, which is, so you say, okay, well, I got this action, I can kick off this feat and use it immediately with this thing I'm doing right now, rather than next round or whatever. So that's quite handy. The other thing you can do, of course, is get a higher difficulty level than you needed, as in you needed a pair, you got three. And that essentially means you succeeded better. There is a rough equivalence of three pairs equals one triple, three triples equals one quad, and so on. They have names which we all found entirely unmemorable. I think it's basic, critical, extreme, impossible, or something like that.
Oh dear. Yes. Yeah, I always had problems remembering the scale in Fate, which has a similar useless set of adjectives.
Yeah. I did go and check the Italian to see if they were more memorable, but no, they are essentially basico, criticale, whatever the words were. They're no more interesting.
Yeah.
Alas. But anyway. One of the common benefits of a feat or your role is that when you are doing the thing that is the thing you do, you may well get a free reroll.
Mm.
In other words, you don't need to have the basic success, and you do not risk your basic success to take it. So there is no reason not to take it.
If you are the greatest swordsman in the world, you get to try again.
Yeah. So that's that. It's all player facing, which I found frankly disorientating. I've been running games for a while, not as long as you, but a while, and I am used to having dice in my hand. I fiddle with them.
Yeah, I
roll them for inspiration.
Yeah, I roll them to find out what I'm going to do next.
So the basic way that this works is turns alternate between action and reaction, is what they call them. So on an action turn, everybody in the party rolls to do whatever they want to do. And on a reaction turn, the GM will choose, this is what the bad guys are doing this time. You know, they're shooting or they're trying to beat you up with bike chains or whatever. And then each player makes a roll difficulty based on how tough the bad guys are to avoid the effects of that, whatever they are doing.
Yeah,
it sounds fiddly. It would probably be less fiddly to someone less embedded in the system, in the traditional way of doing things, than I am. We did find it worked.
Well, I think it's a step that you don't have in Powered by the Apocalypse games, and sometimes that causes, especially elderly GMs like me, to have difficulties in keeping the flow going and deciding exactly where everything is. I can see why they put it in. I can also see why it's going to outrage some people who really like Powered by the Apocalypse.
Well, this is not a Powered by the Apocalypse game. I'm sure they've read it, but I don't think they are deliberately trying to copy or not copy specific things from it.
As I say, I can see the influence of several things already.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So you also get adrenaline, which is essentially your low grade narrative control points. You get an adrenaline for doing something awesome, and you spend it to, for example, to get an extra die before you roll, that kind of thing. There are also spotlights, which are rarer, which will let you do more awesome stuff, such as, for example, avoid certain death.
And what brings the spotlight to you?
Generally, well, when you use one, there's a 50-50 chance it comes back, for a start.
All right, you start with one.
You start with one. You may get an extra one later. Basically, do something very, very awesome or go into the final act. They call them shots, I think, but it is, at least the adventure I ran was very clearly a three-act structure with five or six scenes per act.
Okay.
One last thing on this. In a fight, there is usually a single mass of undifferentiated enemy. What other games might call the mooks.
Yeah.
So you have you know, the guards. They are a critical 2 difficulty when they attack you, and they are a basic when they defend because they're easy to shoot. But they have one single block of hit points, and when the entire party can participate in knocking those off. Obviously, if you have a specific unique guy, then they can have their own separate stats. But most of what we had was that. So overall, I think, I quite liked it. I think the players did start to find it a bit samey. A lot of it tends to be, work out of the various things you could do in this situation, which you are best at, and then try to justify that as the thing you do, so you're rolling most dice.
Yeah.
And the dice rolling tended to feel quite samey, because if you were reasonably good at that, you were generally rolling 5 or 6 or maybe 4 dice at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So I like it, but it not perhaps as much as when I first started playing.
What is it strong in and what is it weak in?
It keeps things moving. A player character's action, or a player's action, I suppose one could say, that on the action turn is going to be, okay, what are you going to do? That will be this stat and that skill. Incidentally, one of the stats is crime, which is mostly dexterity, but not entirely. So I at least found it useful to have a character sheet to hand or a skill list so that I could remind myself, what skills should I actually be asking for here? Anyway, so they will decide what they do, work out what stat and skill they're using, whether they're using any feats on it, and then roll the dice. And then that fairly instantly gives a result. And then on you go. It moves fast. It doesn't get in the way. Yeah.
Did you bump up against any limitations, things that people wanted to do but couldn't, or is the limitation the sort of scenario that is written for it?
Well, I'll come back to the adventure. My feeling, I think, was that it was, well, there was in the bundle of holding a pulp version of this, as well as the 1980s version that I was running.
Yeah.
My feeling, at least, was that it didn't really talk about how to do non-action film things very much. That is, to some extent, a genre switch, so I'm not entirely surprised. If I wanted to do other things, then I would indeed find it restrictive. But I think that the key to that is in your briefing or session zero or however you do it.
Yeah,
you say, well, this is an action film.
And there will be action, and you will have a chance to shine.
But if you want to say, well, I'm going to go off and spend 6 months in the library trying to work this out, well, the system is not really going to support you there.
Fair enough. Is it? Does it have a capability of campaign play, or is it going to be a one-off thingy?
I don't think it's designed for it. It is notable that all of the stuff I've seen for it assumes that you will be starting with freshly generated characters, and the special rules for the beginning of Act 3 not only give you an extra spotlight, but give you a whole new feat that you not only maybe you didn't have previously, but doesn't even have to be on the standard list of feats for your character. Thus the episode's title, Learning Martial Arts During a 2-Hour Helicopter Ride While You Were Unconscious.
The training flashback where you reveal how long you spent with the circus when you were a boy.
It's very much that sort of thing. So you could... I didn't see a lot of support for it. I get the feeling that the difficulty curve may be quite tight, as in you don't want characters with sixes in everything.
Yeah.
Which they could get relatively soon. There are mechanisms for character improvement. I don't want to suggest that you couldn't do that, but I think you'd want to be quite careful about grading the difficulty of the opposition to match that. So the last major point I want to talk about is the sample adventure, and this is where I certainly felt that it very much fell down. The good stuff. It had its quota of action scenes. It had fights. It had dangling out of aircraft. It had jumping from one helicopter to another.
And dying. No.
Jumping from one helicopter to another is not a plausible thing to do, chaps. But never mind. But it was both very dirigiste, because most of the action scenes essentially give you one clue to go on to the next scene.
Yeah.
And in some cases, it was not dirigiste at all, because to get you from the end of Act 1 to the start of Act 2, or from scene, there is essentially nothing. One moment you're on a beach having parachuted down from an exploding plane and won the fight with the guys on the ground, who were also in that plane. And next, you're at an airport somewhere.
Right. Okay.
Why? Why did we come here? We don't know. And similarly, that getting from the airport to the big swanky party that is the beginning of the next bit relies on you getting one particular guy to talk to you, and it's not a role you're going to automatically make. I mean, come on, Robin's Laws of Good Game Mastering is old at this point. It's quite possibly older than the authors of the game, if they're young chaps, I don't know. We know about clue webs. We know about multiple paths to getting the thing. Yes, on the one hand, it would mean that there were scenes written for the adventure that a particular group would not necessarily play.
But I
really would have preferred something like that. And certainly, if I run this again, well, it'll have to be for an adventure I've written myself, because there aren't any other adventures for the modern ones. There's a mini campaign like this one for the pulp game. But I will definitely be doing my sort of adventure design rather than their sort. The other thing that did strike me was it was very much focused on the fighting. One character had a brain role, and they were not useless, but I felt that there was only really one point where they got the chance to show off, as opposed to the people who were punching and kicking and shooting. So...
It's not an investigative game, it would seem then.
Well, it's not just that, but I mean, it's not even a heroic computer hacking or taking over the controls of the other vehicle while they're chasing us or any of those things. It is just about the fighting, and there wasn't even a whole lot of scope for heroic driving / flying, though there was a little bit. And again, that may be. I can't say these guys who wrote this adventure got it wrong. Well, no, I can. I wasn't impressed by that particular aspect of it. I can't say that they were wrong to do so, because they are trying to show off their game, and the thing the game is primarily about is the fights.
Yeah.
And they've got a limited space to put this adventure in, and perhaps they want to make sure that all of it gets used rather than, here are three trees of which you will go down one. It's a choice. It's a choice that I do not personally agree with, but I don't want to claim that that is actually absolutely wrong, except in the sense of, no, you really ought to have a thread leading from A to B to C.
You're not persuading me that it would be worth my while changing from, say, Feng Shui or Savage Worlds to this. I mean...
Well,
the level of my concern with probabilities and modelling is a good deal less than yours, I think. If it's got something that can make it work.
I have played both of those games.
Yeah.
Some of them with you, I believe. Feng Shui I found desperately overcomplicated. I mean, it was the first game that was meant to be cinematic by design. And I think I've played first edition. I don't know what second is like, but it felt creaky. It felt there is definitely creak in here as well, but not a lot. And once I had got my cheat sheet sorted out, I felt it flowed pretty smoothly for any given situation. I can say, okay, it's a that sort of role. Make me a that sort of role. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
So, as I say, I was quite happy with the core mechanic. Maybe it's too simple to give you the variability that you'd want in a long campaign, but it's not really intended for a long campaign. The way I see this, I might write an adventure. We would play that one adventure, and then we would do something else for a bit, and then maybe come back to this for a future occasion. I may well stick something together for a one player is missing. What do we need as an emergency game this week? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not perfect. It's not my universal replacement action game that I've been looking for, though it will may well contribute to the one that I will inevitably write.
You feel that doom coming upon you?
It's where I usually end up in these situations, trying to pick the best of a bunch. I want the thing from this and the thing from that, and they really won't work together. But as yet, he's a bigger spanner, and sure, it'll be fine. I don't know how available it even is now. I think there may be some sort of weird Kickstarter fulfillment situation going on. But if you can get it, I would at least say it's worth a look. I would not personally spend extra money for the Project Medusa adventure. Apart from anything else, you get the first act of it in the core rulebook, so you can see the layout that they've used there, which is quite a good one, of here is the stuff you should specify for an encounter. You know, these are the stats you need for bad guys. These are the tricky fun things they will do, and here's how to list those. That kind of thing. So, yeah. I like it. I should say, again, the original disclaimer that we said, which is that I did not pay for it. So I cannot say whether it would have been worth it, and the price you would have paid for it then is probably cheaper than the price you would pay for it now. Because that bundle is long since finished. But I do like it. You may also find it interesting for pulp, and I believe that they have a superheroes game either in the works or it may be out by now.
There is a genre where bashing things is a huge amount of the entire thing.
Well, I mean, if you look at Champions, you can do things other than have fights, but it's clearly what the game was designed around.
Yeah. But on the other hand, GURPS was designed around two people fighting with medieval weapons and then expanded, and I don't think it's any the worse for that.
True. Anyway, overall feeling, yep, I like it. I will probably run it again. But it's not going to be my regular go-to in whatever situation. And as you suggest, I don't think it's really designed for campaign play. Apart from anything else, being always on for that kind of style of game is tiring. So.
Yeah. High energy, high commitment, and I would say low return on...
It's low resolution. I mean, it's not going to tell you, you hit him with your entire burst. It is going to tell you, yeah, you hit him. They're definitely slowing down a bit now. Which, a lot of the time, is all you need.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to your next enthusiasm. You will have read, you'll have seen, you'll have experienced in the cultural mishmash we all sort of share as gamers, the massive campaign produced by Gareth Ryder Hanrahan and others for Mongoose Traveller, The Pirates of Drinax. This basic setup is you're a bunch of people called in by a king of a system that was once the centre of a great empire and now isn't. And he wants you to restore his glory for him.
A bijou empire et.
Yeah. We were great once empire and now look at us. He gives you a ship, an old and better than he could afford now ship, and says, go out there and be pirates. Now, apparently, beating in the heart of every role gamer is a desire to be a pirate, which I do not share, because being hanged from the yardarm or keel hauled is not something I have an ambition to realise in my career.
Well, I think it probably comes from the same place as Robin Hood in English cultural mythology.
True.
The underdog, the thief, the charming rogue, all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, pirates are basically wet bandits, and bandits are not fun.
Yeah. Being a bandit I've discovered in my old age fresh depths to my personal cowardice and law-abidingness. But
The other thing, of course, is that bandits, this is a divagation, but bandits as we meet them in fantasy games tend to be quite unrealistic, because your actual bandit group, seeing a merchant caravan defended by multiple well-armed and clearly competent people, will say, ooh, nice day, isn't it?
Yes. Let us go about our lawful purposes.
Have a cup of tea.
Yeah, that sort of thing. But
they don't want a fair fight. Fair fights are dangerous. You get killed in them.
Yeah, I kick them when they're down. It's the safest that way.
But anyway,
Roger, having experienced this and got partway through this massive campaign.
Yeah. The immediate genesis for this was the Grognard Files, who a few months ago had an episode in which they were looking back on their play of the Pirates of Drenax without much in the way of detailed spoilers. And I felt enthused by this, and I suggested it to the chap who had run our first game of it, which was 10 years ago. Yikes.
My life, this is a venerable mega campaign.
Yes and no. When it came out originally, and the version that we played 10 years ago, it was basically a bunch of promotional PDFs for what was then the new Mongoose Traveller.
Yeah.
And what it is now, when they released their second edition of Traveller, they decided to uplift it to the Great Big Book campaign treatment. In fact, I think it's three separate Great Big Books, mm-hmm. plus assorted supplementary material. It's a sandbox campaign is the first thing to bear in mind, and that I think is probably where we ran astray last time. We're used to a certain amount of guidance and adventures, not necessarily go here, do this, but at least...
But here is this interesting thing, would you like to go and do it?
Yeah, and certainly my default model for games I run tends to be perhaps even an agency style, your mission this week is to investigate this. There will be various things around the sides of that, but essentially this is the focus and everybody knows it. So we're definitely looking harder at that this time. Our characters have goals, our characters have quite distinct goals in some cases, and I'm sure that won't cause any trouble at all later on.
You can't all marry the princess.
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
So far we've played... we're calling it a session zero, but it's not quite what other people might call that. We had already done a lot of discussion about the characters we play this time round, who are not wildly unlike the characters we played last time in most respects. There's an exception to that, which I'll come back to. But basically, because we all know each other, we already have a fair idea of any stuff we don't want to deal with in game. So it was mostly, by the time we got to play, we had characters ready to go, and it was mostly a bit of introduction, the initial briefing from the king, and an initial bit of adventure.
Yeah.
And we will see how that goes next time. And then I was on holiday for 2 weeks, so we haven't actually played since. But that's why we haven't released that episode yet. We want to put them all out in sequence. Yes, I'm playing a quite a different character from last time. Because last time I had the Drinax nobleman, who was a pretty competent pilot.
Yeah, and a bluff, hearty fellow, and I seem to recall.
Who's the chap who played the villain in The Prisoner of Zender? Anyway, that was my character illustration.
Fair enough.
This time I've gone slightly sideways from that. And I've been playing Traveller for quite a long time. I have some idea about the alien races. I'm playing a Varga. These are the uplifted wolves who were taken from Earth by the ancients many, 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 many years ago and tweaked about and dropped off on their own planets. So, not wanting to stereotype, but if I say somewhere in the intersection between Lord Flashheart from Blackadder, still worshipping God, last I heard he'd started worshipping me, and the dandy highwayman from Adamant's single Stand and Deliver.
A good grief, I say.
Flash is important.
Definitely, yes.
He left the Imperium on account of a difference of opinion. The Imperium was of the opinion that he should be in prison with the rest of his old crew, and he felt differently. But at the same time, he wants to build something lasting, because the eternal problem of Varga systems is that somebody builds something amazing, and then they die, and their less charismatic successor takes over, and it all falls apart. So he thinks that even if I have to build it round the skeleton of this creaky old empire, maybe, just maybe, you can have something that will actually be sustainable.
Oh, a villain with ambition and a plan.
And, well, it's not so much that he is in line to marry the princess as that everybody else took a swift step back when it was mentioned and he didn't. So we kind of hope she's broad-minded and we won't be going into details. I mean, at least they're from the same planet originally.
Well, wait a second. Yes. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. Come on, these guys are high tech. I'm sure they've got methods of producing offspring that do not require the old fashioned stuff.
Yes, but I'm not sure there'd be any relationship to you. If you are prepared to be the father to her children, then I'm sure that they can manage it. But yeah.
But in any case, we're doing this in GURPS again, because we like GURPS.
Oh, yeah, I was going to ask him. I had heard, and I was going to ask about that. Why, for the love of Pete?
I could wimp out and say it's the GM's choice, but I'm in favour too. I mean, the thing I really noticed designing this character was how much I really enjoy designing a GURPS character when I'm not under time pressure.
All right, fair enough.
I hate it when I've got 2 hours before I leave for the convention and I need 6 PCs, but...
Yeah, manage your time better than that. That I think there is a certain pleasure in the life path system in Mongo's Traveller as a found art, sort of thing.
Yes,
but I also agree that there is pleasure to be found in designing things in a system that you know very well.
Well, also, I'm remembering your Rift campaign for Traveller, using that same Traveller system, where I got quite lucky and I had a great time. My character has a solid history of I did this and I did this, and you've probably seen me on Heroes of the Imperium. It was only about season 17, but they got round to me eventually. And meanwhile, one of the other players had lots of bad luck and ended up not really having a lot of useful skills and not really being able to do much that other player characters couldn't do better, and so on. So that is my concern. There is a point-based system for Mongoose Traveller, but that seems to be the worst of both worlds because it's still Mongoose Traveller.
Yeah.
Which, I don't hate, but it doesn't. But it doesn't give me the interesting events. It doesn't have events at all. you just spend the points on stats and skills and stuff.
Hmm.
Now, I have a vague idea for this, which is not ready to run, but if anybody else wants to take it and actually do the work, I'm not going to argue, which would be you start doing normal character generation, but you have a pool of, I don't know, 50 die modifier points. And every time you have made a roll, you can spend some of the dice, some of the points from that pool on making the roll the thing you want. And any you have left over at the end get turned into resources of some sort. The 50 is an arbitrary number. But basically, I want to be able to say, all right, this particular thing, getting into the Navy straight out of Naval Academy, off the poor world, is a part of the backstory I've already thought about. I want to make sure this happens.
Yeah.
Whereas, okay, I don't actually mind. You know, I'll take what the dice give me as far as promotion goes. That sort of thing. Again, this is a divagation. It's a shame because, well, the other thing with GURPS, of course, and, well, several other things with GURPS.
Go on. Well, modified personality.
We are using GURPS 4th edition.
Yeah.
And the only official traveller for GURPS 4th edition was GURPS Traveller Interstellar Wars,
which is
set well before the period we're talking about. And it's basically humans are making their first big breakout from Earth and meeting the decaying and decadent Villani Empire. So... And yes, obviously that gives us some basics, but it doesn't, for example, have much in the way of all useful spacecraft or equipment catalogues or anything like that. Because the GM is young and enthusiastic and stupid, he has converted the spacecraft in the campaign, which are obviously set it up for Mongoose Traveller, to GURPS spaceships, and I will readily admit to him and anybody else that the GURPS spaceships combat system is way better. Much more fun to play.
Okay, now that is a good and prime reason for being for using GURPS. But if you, I don't see you unlike the Rifts campaign that we played. You're not going to be able to avoid combat entirely.
Oh, indeed.
You're going to need to go in and attack people. You desperados, you.
And personally, I would have made some other differences because, for example. In Traveller canon, or assumption at least, a laser and a particle beam have basically the same sort of range for the same sort of size of weapon, whereas in GURPS spaceships, a particle beam is a short-range but more damaging weapon, whereas the laser is the long-range but doesn't actually kill you quickly.
Yeah.
And so on. But basically, Traveller, classic Traveller combat, and Mongoose as much as I've played it, which was mostly with you, to be fair, doesn't really seem to care about different weapons having different ranges. You know, you have your turret with missiles and lasers and maybe a particle beam, but they all engage at basically the same range and do the same sort of thing. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. We haven't had a combat in the game yet. There are fun things you can do with GURPS. So, jumping back a bit, we don't have any sort of official character conversions. For Rusein, my Vagra character, I looked at the 3rd edition conversion in original GURPS Traveller.
Yeah.
On the basis that is as canonical a version as we get, and then uplifted that into 4th edition using the 3rd to 4th edition GURPS conversion rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's being reasonable.
There are psychological differences between the Vaga and humans, which actually I think that is that it's probably quite easy to model that sort of the sort of compulsive following of charismatic leaders quite easily with GURPS. Yes, and the other matters are fairly trivial. Yeah.
This does come on to one of my other points, which is that. One of the reasons I continue to go back to GURPS, and if I ever design a better GURPS than GURPS, another Heartbreaker project, this will be something I definitely keep, is having that list of especially mental disadvantages Yeah. That list that says you are chummy and you are overconfident and so on. And yes, obviously I'm an experienced role player. I can play a character like that anyway. But it is really nice not only to have that list there to remind me while I'm looking over my character sheet deciding what I should do next, but also that each of them has some sort of mechanical approach attached to it. So I can say, well, okay, maybe I'm not. I don't actually want to be overconfident in this situation because it could actually be dangerous. Okay, here is my role to act or not act in accordance with that.
Yeah, and it's a commitment on the part of the player to risk acting inappropriately in advance in return for points, and that works.
There is a thing that I don't know if we'll be using it in this, but I've seen it in a couple of other places. I think it's in one of the power-ups books that was originally in Action, that you can also say, right, here is the session and we'll do various things in it. Here, right now, I will indulge my disadvantage in a way that is relatively safe but will cause some friction. And having done that, that can then count as my disadvantage rolls for other situations we might meet later on. And obviously it could be subject to gamesmanship, but I quite like the idea of that.
You are storing up previously... Here is being a dick that I prepared earlier.
there's no point being lecherous while you're on the ship with your mates. I mean,
it depends on your mates, doesn't it?
They're going to get bored with it.
Very quickly, I would imagine. So, you're looking forward to this, all right?
Yeah.
How far the Grognard files managed to get all the way to the grand political climax, or from what I've heard of their reports of it. So, do you anticipate getting that far this time, or will you be able to avoid the shoals that you wrecked on the last time?
Let me see if I can find the first edition, which I still have lurking on my hard drive somewhere.
Careful, there are terrible things lurking down there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So that was, I think, 10 PDFs overall for the campaign, and I think the one that we ran aground on was number 2. That said, I mean, even in that version, and certainly in this version, there is no particular reason why these things should be happening in order. A lot of what this is about is a metagame that I haven't looked into hard yet, though I've designed a record sheet for it because I like designing forms and charts and things. Essentially, what we are trying to do is get the local independent worlds, broadly speaking, on our side. At the very least, most of them by default are not happy to see us. Because we are, after all, the old empire that screwed them over. And one of the problems is that the way the old empire screwed them over is it got greedy. It got irksome enough that its subject worlds, when the invaders came along, said, yep, we're quite happy to be under you instead. It's them over there. You want to go bomb them, not us.
Yeah, I think the Empire remembers those interactions more favourably than the people they were actually interacting with, which is a thing in the real world, too. God, you wonder.
I can't say we're the Space British Empire. The Space British Empire did not have uplifted canids, but, you know...
That's
certainly one of the things going into my viewpoint of, these guys are not going to be happy to see us and rejoin our resurgent empire. They have records, if not memories.
They have long lists of resentment and times you screwed us over and cut off our food supplies, I would imagine. You know.
That kind of thing, yeah. So... there is that. And we're going to have to be clever, and we have some ideas, but which of those ideas are going to work, if any? Honestly, I have no idea. So, but yeah, this is... pleasurable anticipation, which is a state I like to be in at the start of a campaign. I mean, I have ideas about what might happen. I will be very surprised if they come through the way I'm currently envisioning them, because they never do.
We play to be surprised.
But that sense of limitless possibilities is one of the reasons I keep coming back to role-playing games, so I'm very glad that I can still feel it.
Here's the limitless possibilities. Oh, and before we wrap this up, in answer to your earlier question, in the 1937 version, it was Douglas Fairbanks Jr., surprisingly.
Oh, no wonder.
Of Hensar.
Man looks good in a moustache.
In the 1952, it was James Mason.
No, 37, please.
And brought in to replace Richard Green. But I think you're thinking of Basil Rathbone. In The Mark of Zorro, and as Sir Guy of Gisborne.
Now I'm going to check. Having checked, it is Douglas Fairbanks Jr. that I was thinking of. I have a splendid first drop of him in a frankly Ruritanian uniform, casually smoking a cigarette, which was very much how I saw Sir Vorik.
In that case, you have chosen well, otherwise. If you would like to send us pictures of the actors you have used as the basis for your characters, you probably shouldn't, because it would flood our mailbox. But if you have other comments, you can reach us via...
Leave a message on the website or email podcast@tekeli.li. I am particularly interested because I haven't met anybody else who's played Outgunned. If you have played it, let me know what you thought of it, whether you agree with my impressions, whether there's something I'm missing.
All right, and we will come back to you with more stuff to interest you in a month's time.
Maybe it will be cooler.
We can but hope.